Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, sir?
Good, John. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic. Happy to be in week 9 of the term and looking forward to getting the new term launched and revealing all the cool stuff that we have on offer for the October term, the fall and spring term, I guess you could say.
Depending on what part of the world you're in, my friend.
Yes, yes.
It's the spring and winter term, depending on where you're spring and summer.
It's the spring, fall and spring.
What?
Autumn and spring.
Yes.
As we call it, autumn or fall. So yes, it's a common mistake for those of us in the northern hemisphere to call things by their northern hemisphere season, not thinking that there's a whole half of the world that, well, views it in an opposite way. Anyway, I've just been working hard on getting this stuff together. You know, obviously, as we've talked about in the past in the DoD, a lot of involvement in getting everything with profs, the classes lined up, footage, things like that. But again, I think we've got a great one coming up. But that being said, we're still deep in the throes of wrapping up the current term. And I got to say, really, I want to thank all the profs this term for keeping up to date. It's something that we've worked hard on to make sure that we had the classes and our courses delivered in a timely manner and within, you know, reasonable amount, maybe week max delay. Everyone's been doing great so far this term. So thanks everyone for doing that. And hopefully you guys who are members can actually see that some of the changes we made are actually paying off. We're walking the walk, not just talking the talk. Is that the right thing?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I think it is. So anyway, it's a lot of work, but again, it's something that we really do take seriously. And we've said we take it seriously. And hopefully this, at least for this term, and frankly, last term actually shows that we are making changes to make sure we get stuff done on time. So thanks for that.
You going to buy a new Apple Watch?
So it was one of these notes I put down. How long before Mike brings up I am going to buy a new watch.
Wearable
yes,
tech.
I am also going to buy a new phone.
Uh-huh. Which one are you going to buy?
As well. I'm going to buy the small one. I want a phone that actually fits in my hand.
How many gig are you going to buy? Because they've upped the gig.
I'm going to stick with the middle version. I'm going to stick with the middle version and be happy that I've doubled. Because I went with a small version this time.
Yeah.
I downsized from what I've done in the past. Luckily, I don't need to really worry about rushing out next week or this Friday, waiting in line to pre-order, waiting online in line to do pre-order because my contract is up on October 15th. So hopefully that by that time they'll be in good supply. But I think there's some interesting things about it. I'm all for having a higher quality display, better color rendition, faster, thinner.
Hey, my American phone has got to be up for a contract renewal, surely.
You know what? I did check that the other day, Mr. iPhone whore.
Yes.
And yes, it is up for renewal. So you could renew it or you can take my hand-me-down.
No, but hang on a second.
When I dropped it the other day riding, only a tiny dent in the corner.
You can buy the broken one.
Inside. Yes. Mike and I lamenting.
America, in America, that if you're on a plan, you can actually get an iPhone i5C for zip. Like they're included. That's what I saw. I don't know.
Yeah,
you Americans have weird things, but.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably true, actually. I didn't pay attention because.
You don't care. Well,
yes, that's what I was going to say. I stopped short of saying that because I was thinking, well, it's outside my wheelhouse. It's outside my area of interest. But yeah, I basically don't care because I wouldn't buy it. Yes, I think you're probably right. There's something that you can get for close to free or 99 cents or something, or maybe that's the Amazon phone that you can get for 99 cents now.
Right.
Apparently they didn't sell so well, but yes. Interesting. You know, the joke online, I think right now is that I've seen from the Android fans is welcome to 2012. With this little cute little graphic that matches the specs of the current iPhone to the, Android phone, the Samsung phone from 2012, but it's a nice phone.
How much data do you use on your phone?
I went with a lower plan. I'm down probably 2 gigs. My plan,
okay,
is the plan that I have per month. I actually downsized because it was significantly cheaper. Mainly because here I'm connected to Wi-Fi, so a lot of the stuff that I do is connected to Wi-Fi. So it's a significant cost savings. But I think I've been trying to think. So what do you think? What implications? Kind of moving this into the FX Guide, FX PhD realm, what implications do you think the watch, that you can see in the watch, have for things related to our industry, like work in our industry?
Okay, but can I just say that
set
I...
Or, no, can I just say no.
Okay.
You can't.
It's free.
Okay,
I've looked online.
Go ahead.
Give me a free phone.
Oh, it's free. Okay, it's free.
So, but, the thing that I would say...
You've had 24 hours to mull this, right? Yes.
So the thing I would say is that the idea of having compute power in your pocket and having a device on your wrist that has a lot of information seems really, really interesting. The first thing that I would do in a heartbeat if I was a developer right now in the film industry, ready for this? This is my tip. Yep. Get a watch, get the developer's kit, and then make the watch something that sits on a camera as a accelerometer device thing, and feeds info back to an iPhone so that you can log information about what the camera's doing based on what it's feeding back to the iPhone. So, in other words, you just use it as a data input device for movement and see how far you can get, because I'd be really interested to know what information is being able to be recorded by the watch for health reasons that could be modified to be information that could feed into information about what the camera's doing. I don't know. It may be completely too coarse in its information, but I'd love someone to experiment with doing that. So that's the first thing I'd do.
Yeah, actually.
In other words, don't use it as a watch, use it as a data collector.
Right. And of course, it would not be something it would basically use. I'm not sure how, obviously, it wouldn't use GPS, because the theory is apparently that the GPS is located in your phone if it's attached to you. You're carrying it around with your phone. But I'm curious, actually don't know what the M8 coprocessor actually measures and how it works. I'd be curious. That's a great idea. Interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, it may be that the stuff that you really want is in the phone, and so that theory ain't going to work. But that's point one. Point two is obviously it'd be great if there was some way that you could set up an onset logging thing that just allowed you to tap your watch to enter a bunch of information that, you know, was sort of grabbed into your phone. Because one of the things about onset is it's just juggling hands. And if all I had to do was just reach over and tap my phone, my watch, that would be a much easier thing than pulling my phone out, pressing some buttons on a menu and coming up with some stuff. Well, it could just be like, you know, good takes. It could be, any number of things. But I, as an input device with the compute power on the phone is where I'd be starting.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect you bring up, because what I was struck by in the demonstration is this idea of having a few sensible, easy response buttons back that are, you know, like yes, no, maybe so, you know, whatever.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you're right. That'd be a great logging technique, a good, you know, great take, bad take, flub take, and that would just be linked somehow, and that's all you need to do. That would be simple enough that you would need to flag. It'd be easy to do. You wouldn't have to be fiddling with your watch, typing in stuff. It would just be, you know, here are 3 to 4 buttons. Pick one, mark the take, you're good to go. So I did look actually at the M8 motion coprocessor, and it's an accelerometer, compass, gyroscope, and barometer what it measures data from within the phone.
Hmm. So the other thing,
drop your iPhone from 10,000 feet, it would record your altitude as you go. Sorry.
The other thing, of course, is that two nights ago, I used my phone as a torch. And I used it as a torch because I was, you know, bumbling around and helping someone who was elderly in the dark, and there were some stairs, and I just grabbed my phone and used it as a torch. I've done that many times because it's really easy to do it on the current OS. But my point is, there's no way when the original iPhone came out that I would have said that the number one use, that the most useful thing for you that day, 2 days ago, was a torch. I mean, you know, there's just a million things like that where I had no concept when the original iPhone came out of the things that I would currently use it for. It redefined the notion of a phone for me, because while it's still a phone, the phoning function is something I hardly ever use. And so the definition of the word phone kind of changed. In other words, my use of it redefined my concept of what a phone is, as it has for many people. So I don't know that the idea of a watch like is the right starting point. I mean, how much will I use this to tell time, and how much will I use it for doing other things? I don't know. But I do think that pairing back to serious compute power in your pocket, and John, you'd know this better than I, but it seems like the 6 has a decent amount of processing power that, you know, it's upped quite considerably. I've only seen relative stats from the original iPhone, which is kind of an irrelevant thing because I can't even remember what an original iPhone was like. But I believe it's the A8, isn't it? Is that the right?
Yeah, thing? Yeah, it is.
It's a good step up.
25. I mean, it's a good step up. I think the graphics performance is even better, as far as if you're going to take a look at percentage increase between the two. Apparently, the graphics performance is even better, which is great, actually, because number one, hopefully, with the faster graphics performance, you also get a lower power consumption at the same time, right? Because that's always what people try and do with the next gen. Silicon, I guess. But I think it's a sensible, maybe not. I'm curious at what point, and Intel has some new processors coming out. I'm curious at what point these smaller devices become a true sensible computing platform to do more than, you know, I mean, I think you can edit, obviously, on an iPad and some Android tablets and so forth. But what point does it become kind of a serious push against, say, a desktop application or a notebook application from maybe 2 years ago? You know, I'm curious where that processor path is going to lead.
Yeah, because, I mean, you and I both decided to not get the garbage bin tower Macs because our laptops had reached a point where, for most of the stuff we do, we didn't need more compute power. But that would have seemed like an odd thing 5 years ago, not to have a tower at your desk. Actually, something I just thought of as I was saying, as you were speaking then. John, you, I think, pointed out to me that the link between the watch and the phone is probably going to be Bluetooth, which would actually limit any capabilities on set, right? Because what's the kind of distance that a Bluetooth can cover? It's not that far, right?
I think you'd be within reason. I actually don't know on Bluetooth 4. I don't know if that was... I'm going to look really quick while I'm talking to you. But the thing about Bluetooth 4, which is what I was telling Mike yesterday, that I think, obviously, because it's the most recent version of it, it's a incredibly low power consumption, which is obviously quite critical for the watch. I think my guess is that a great percentage of the size of the Apple Watch or any electronic watch out there right now is dedicated to battery. So that's always a complete concern when utilizing it. But I have, I use a watch, my iPhone, as well as fitness trainers on my bike, and I can be fairly far away with it syncing. I would say, I thought I was probably a good 25 to 30 feet away when I got synced up.
Wow, I'm just looking that up. The theoretical maximum is 330 feet. Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay. So
as if.
So okay. So that's okay. So my 30 feet is not out of the question. Then it's well within the spec.
I think
guess
that's
you could
a theoretical
say.
Spec. Yeah.
Yeah, right. but 30 feet. If it's somewhere between 30 and 300, what if it's 100 feet? Right. That's 1/3 of the theoretical spec. Then that should be fairly doable on set.
Yeah, it's studio space-wise.
Yeah. In a studio, right. Yeah. I mean, that'd be quite a bit different if you were out in the field potentially and moving the camera around a lot, or something on a drone or something like that, which could be kind of cool. But
no, a drone is not going to work, but yeah. So as I say, it's really hard to know how it's going to be developed. I do know that given that the user community generated, or the developer community generated, a lot of money from being early adopters and early suppliers of apps, that they, you know, if you're an app developer, you'd be like, I can't wait, I've got a new thing to develop apps for. So there'll be a, you know, huge chunk. Actually, I remember when it really hit the apps, people were emailing me privately going, Mike, is there anything that you'd like an app developed. I mean, I'd be happy to develop something so you could use it. Not give me equity, you understand, or anything. Just if you've got any really good ideas, you know, I'd be really happy to take them off your hands kind of thing. And I'd be like, really? Because if I had any really, really good ideas for an app. So I'm sure that there'll be some really great innovative ideas that are much cleverer than a torch. I just, you know, feel like that relationship, you know, you've got to look at the things that it's doing that aren't watch-like, but things that are form factor. So the fact that you don't need to pull something out of your pocket and it's just there and it's really easy to get to all the time, you'd think would make it really relevant for a bunch of things that you could set up on the phone and then, you know, work with separately. And triggering the other way, I haven't seen much information about that, but I mean, I can imagine having an iPhone somewhere and using the phone to trigger the camera, right? Like as a remote control or, you know, use it as a, so not just for selfies, but, you know, if you had that camera set up to do something and you wanted to trigger it because the camera is now in the phone, which is a, on a skateboard and some device somewhere, and you're wanting to, you know, use the on-off switch, as it were, from the phone, that's all going to be really interesting stuff as well. It's the connectivity between the two devices. Do you know what the frame, you know, when you go to these high frame rates on it, on the new 6, that is, the phone, do you know what the resolution is? It must drop, too. Right?
Yeah, it must drop. That's generally how they...
Because, I mean, the really high-speed iPhone 6 slow-mo looks great. I mean, that seems like something that you'd really want. I can see like a lot of reasons why someone would want to have slow motion. It's not just for skipping ropes.
Yeah, I checked, and the last time I checked on their website, they actually didn't have any kind of information about what size that was.
But it goes up to 240 frames a second, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Though, you know, probably has quite a bit of bandwidth between the camera and the memory in the platform. So, hey, so switching gears a bit on other product announcements, and you mentioned the Mac Pro from Apple, which we didn't buy into in the first round. And I'm curious when the second round is going to come out, because that's actually been around
for
a while.
The NVIDIA one.
Yeah, the NVIDIA one, exactly. But actually, HP introduced a new workstation this week, too, that's pretty compelling for those of, you know, for people who really need that kind of desktop horsepower, whether you're running Flame or Sirius, other kind of software in it, Nuke or whatever. But they have the new Z840s out. Did you see anything about that? Because they're pretty crazy from a feature standpoint. Yeah, a lot of people actually just chatting with people online are pretty psyched about it. People who run Linux or Windows. The new 840, I think, has supports up to 36 cores now.
Right.
within the desktop, and a whopping 2 terabytes of RAM.
So I've been talking to the Arnold guys, as you know, and Marcus has been testing on that. So that's the 32 core. Yeah, because I knew that was coming. And that configuration, I'm pretty sure they got an early one for, because they were doing stuff on their multi-threading, you know, and how linear it was as it went up to those higher levels. That is really significant, isn't it?
It is. I mean, that's if you think about the idea of having that 2 terabytes of RAM accessible that way with all the CPU, because if you think about it, if you're going to have all those cores, you really need to have a lot more RAM to access and to access that. I Freudian slip there with excess and access. But it's cool. And they also have Thunderbolt 2, which is like the current system, or the 820 is available as an add-on card. It's not... still not built into their platform like it is on Macintosh and Apple systems, but they still have that option. It's also the same, pretty much the same form factor as what you have seen in the Z800 and the Z820, or at least the liquid cooled Z820 as well. But, you know, for those of you who need that really, really super high end workstation, it truly is a significant increase in computing horsepower available in NetHP.
The linear or non-linear nature of scaling with cores is now got to be a principal concern for any piece of software that you're looking at, right? Because, I mean, it really makes a huge difference how well something handles a multi-core increase in relationship to performance. I mean, that's just astonishing.
Yeah, it really is. And again, I guess a lot of that has to be, it's obviously not for everyone. Everyone doesn't need that kind of computing, but for those of you who do, and I know there are a lot of you who are listening who have systems like that, it's a nice advancement, I think, from a PC and Linux workstation standpoint.
Yeah.
The other cool thing that came out, sorry, go ahead.
No. I've got some heads up on some new NVIDIA stuff that's coming. I was about to ask you whether you've been across that. I can't get to the launch here in Sydney because we're shooting for FXPHD. But I was interested with the next generation of cards as well.
Yeah, I think, is that the... I was assuming that that was what was released at SIGGRAPH, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the Australian... Well, because I don't know, obviously, because I haven't had, the event hasn't happened here yet.
Right, right. I was curious. I saw that. I was curious. Is that something new then, or what we covered right before SIGGRAPH with the addition of rounding out the product line with the K4200 and the K2200?
Well, unless there's something else happening, I guess that is it. I mean, it's really... we're looking at buying a bunch of computers for some stuff that we're doing near the end of the year. And I've got to say, I'm almost like, don't even bother looking at any specs and anything until about 2 weeks before you want to buy. Like, really? Like, it changes so fast. So, unless there's something else that you're aware of, this is coming up at the end of this month. And announcements, like invitations have been sent out for announcements and stuff. So I'm just looking at it now. I don't have any details on what they are. But that'd have to be the Australian launch of what we saw overseas, I'm sure. You were about to say something else?
Yeah, my other cool product announcement since our last podcast was Dell introducing a new 27-inch 5K monitor, which is pretty interesting. It's 27 inches with a monitor of 51, with a res of about 5,100 by 2,900. So basically 14.7 megapixels compared to the 8.3 in a 4K monitor. Very, very cool.
I don't know if I had this discussion with you. I had an interesting chat to somebody at SIGGRAPH about OLEDs, and they were saying that there's been a real drop in OLED manufacturing products, etc., because the yield is so bad. And not only is the yield bad on the monitors, but the OLED life expectancy on monitors isn't that great. And like, we have an OLED and we love it to death, but now I'm fearful that it's a dead tech, and I'm worried that our one will suddenly fail on us. Do you know much about that?
I had heard that, actually. You did mention to me about the... I didn't realize that they were ramping down production, but I didn't. I was also a little bit aware of the potential shorter life cycle. I'm curious if they kind of... OLEDs were, kind of Russian development. I'm curious, it was like too much too soon, almost, that, the rush to get something to market because of the higher performance traditional ones. I wonder if that was a problem. I'm thinking out loud here, Mike. I don't know enough about it, but it's interesting to hear that potentially the life expectancy isn't quite as good as the other tech.
Yeah, I mean, at CES, like a year or so ago, they were like touting, 4K OLEDs, and OLEDs were just, the bomb in terms of darks and everything else. And as I understand it, Sony's halted OLED production development, like not just, not selling them, they're just not even developing anything else anymore, which is just incredible to me. Now, we obviously showed some new tech at SIGGRAPH that is producing outstanding results in terms of a higher dynamic range monitor that isn't OLED. But it's really difficult, isn't it, when you're trying to pick a tech? Because I would have said that OLED was a really good, piece of tech that we were waiting till it kind of matured and then it was going to be everywhere. And it seems to have like just burned out before, bad pun, but it seems to have burned out before it gained traction. And yet, like monitors you tend to keep for a fairly long time. Like I'm not, cycling our monitors every 18 months. I mean, if a new laptop comes out every 2 years, well, that's to be expected, right? But monitors, especially expensive broadcast monitors, you expect to keep them for longer than 18 months or 2 years. And so picking the right tech is a pretty serious deal. And I certainly seem to have got that one completely wrong. But all accounts, it went quickly from, you know, God's gift to monitors to, oh God, don't buy an OLED. And I, you know, it was almost like I looked down, had a cup of coffee, looked up, and it had changed.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, that's the other thing interesting too about technology in this 5K panel. It basically, you have to run two DisplayPort cables to it because a single DisplayPort can't drive that resolution. So, you know, it's almost outside the spec of the currently shipping display, you know, for on one cable, outside the spec of a DisplayPort 1.2 spec, I guess you could say. So it actually has quite limited support potentially from various computers. You know, I think you have to wait for the next iteration of DisplayPort to actually drive it with a single cable. So there's some cool stuff out there, but maybe we're just getting a little ahead of ourselves. I guess.
Okay, so some stats I looked up say that for the first generation of OLEDs, they saw a degradation after 1,000 hours of the blue by 12%, the red by 7%, and the green by 8%. And that's comparable with what you'd expect to see from an LED at 25,000 to 40,000 hours, I believe, or maybe somewhere between 14,000 and 25,000, which is like to say, crap. Yeah.
So I suggest turning off the monitor between
takes.
You're
not using it. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, not quite that bad, but wow, that's actually pretty significant.
Hey, that's the first generation, right? It's not the,
right.
Necessarily we didn't buy the first gen, but that's the problem that they had. Because there was also going to be flexible OLEDs, right? I mean, the OLEDs, you know, like a flexible polymer.
Like the paper kind of, or plasticky kind of stuff. Yeah, my dad, being Mr. Organic Chemist and doing a lot of superconductor research, which was tangentially related to OLED research, has always been a big fan of OLEDs. And actually, I did mention to him what you told me about the adoption rate. He's like, yeah, it's not quite there yet. So, you know, like his investment in Betamax back in the day, his investment in OLEDs. Superior technology, maybe for a bit.
So I was going to ask you about the 5K thing. Like, we've just got our head around 5K, which is to say that we had to begrudgingly go up from 4K, which took us a mile of effort to get to from HD. But Fincher's next Girl Gone is 6K. Do you and I really realistically think that it makes any difference that Gone Girl was actually done at 6K? I mean, is that just mad? I mean, it's obviously done on Epic.
Yeah, well, it provided them flexibility in framing is what it provided them. And at that NVIDIA presentation here on their introduction or their new products in the professional line, this was a month ago before Seagraph, they had a talk about it. And that's basically what that production provided for him. It gave him the flexibility. He's very big on working with the footage after post and prepping it that way. It's quite interesting. They have a full Premiere workflow based on the film that we'll be covering at FX Guide hopefully soon. I'm working on that. But yeah, I mean, that's where a large part where that came from. Which I think does make sense. We've talked about it a lot, right, from the day one with the red. I think that part makes sense. Finishing in that? Yeah, no. I don't, you know.
Did they finish in 6K? Because, I mean, I can imagine them finishing in 4K.
I don't. No. I guess I'm someone who will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm like 99.9% sure that they did not, that they finished in 4K.
And you're talking about the Quadro 5200s, right? That they were using. Is that the thing you went before Chris before Seagraph, right?
Yeah. Yes, it was. And I'm sorry, I just found a thing that I think it was actually. I'm looking through my notes, and I think it was actually maybe mastered at 5K. So right. Shot in 6K, mastered at 5K, I believe. So, but again, like I said, we're working actually pretty hard to get a story with one of the editors and workflow guys actually who set up the whole pipeline. Hopefully we'll be able to have that in the coming weeks.
And not only that, but we'll be, I'll be definitely wanting to cover that in background, because one of the questions that we had in the forums was whether we could discuss that in background next term. Obviously the film doesn't come out to the beginning of October, so we're not doing anything this term, but if we can discuss that at some depth and in terms of a, you know, more serious workflow. I don't feel like I'm even in a position to have that discussion right now. And certainly John, I'd be leaning heavily.
Maybe I'll
on
have
you,
that discussion for the background course, because again, I think that's a great example of what we talked about at length last week, because the FX Guide, FX PhD kind of collaboration of sorts, right? So
yeah,
that's a perfect example of what we can bring to FX PhD.
But I just wonder at some level, because I mean, it'd be easy to say, "Oh, who cares about 6K and 5K?" But I do quite care when people shoot things on IMAX. And one of the other things we've been hunting for ages is to try and get more information on the digital IMAX camera. And we got to all the right people and they just don't want to talk about it right now. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a waste of time to be overshooting, because I really like seeing things that are shot in IMAX. More so than I should, given that I'm so seemingly indifferent to stuff that's shot at 6K. And I believe the IMAX is like a 4K camera, the one that they used on Transformers, the digital IMAX camera, though we just can't get a lot of details on it because they're just not publishing them right now. But yeah, so anyway, it all translates to needing bigger drives and faster computers, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does. And the other thing, and since we kind of started that 5K discussion on the monitor, what I think is interesting about that 5K monitor is actually utilizing it in high DPI mode, effectively the Retina display mode, which is if you're looking at a 1920 by 1200 display, you're actually looking at an image that's being generated at double that. So what, 3840 by... 2400. Is that right? So that's basically how the Retina displays work, is while you're viewing it at seemingly one resolution, it's actually being rendered at seemingly twice the resolution to give you that finer detail. So that's another reason why these new monitors, it's the same idea behind the Retina, this idea of having a Retina iMac, the all-in-one Retina iMac. I mean, that would be a great machine to have. Built-in machine, really, high quality text. I mean, for me, it's once you start looking at a Retina display, whether it's on the iPhone, the iPad, a Dell monitor, or the MacBook Pro, it's really tough to go back. And I have a side-by-side, and I basically hate my monitor that's not a high-resolution display, high DPI display, and really still doing all my work on the internal display on the MacBook.
Well, that 6.9 inch, I think it's 6.9, isn't it? The larger of the phones. Mm-hmm. That's the iPhone 6 Plus. That's 1920 by 1080, isn't it?
I mean, yes. Yeah. 1920 by 1080, but at 326 DPI. Is that right?
I think something like that. It's just sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So
300 DPI was like, standard print res, right? Back in the day.
But I mean, I'm still at the age where my eyesight, I can tell the difference. And again, I'm a huge, huge fan of the quality of the high res displays, the high DPI displays. It makes a significant, it's actually, I'm sorry, 400 PPI.
400?
Pixel resolution. The standard one being 326. So.
Wow.
Still doesn't make me want to get it, but...
I really prefer it for text more than I prefer it for... people talk about movies, but I like...
Oh, text is amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, it actually explains a lot about the thin font they chose for iOS 8 or 7, right? Mm-hmm. If you didn't have those quality displays, it would be a horrible font. There's a bit of discussion of whether it's still a horrible font with the high-resolution displays, but that's for another podcast. How about...
Yes, yes. Don't get us started on fonts, dear friends.
Well, hey, my friend, I need to get going. Got some stuff to do before heading out. I'm actually going to meet up with a Flame Muse group down at the Cat and Fiddle to share a pint tonight.
In fact, I think you're buying at the bar.
I am buying at the bar, yes. Hoping that no one shows up.
I'd like a lager.
I'll have one for you.
And a pack of crisps, please. Actually, I have 2 pints of lager and a pack of crisps. Those little things for the thing. Thank you. Okay, great. Well, good talking to you, John.
Good, as always, talking to you, and thanks everyone for listening.
Absolutely. See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.